you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Bill Press Podcast. All eyes on Virginia this week as Virginia voters go to the polls to determine control of the state Senate and House of Delegates. Will Virginia, which, remember, not long ago was a red state, but now has two Democratic senators and a Democratic governor, continue to go blue? And will, as Virginia goes in 2019, impact how the country goes in 2020? Well, to find out, we sat down with Terry McAuliffe, former governor of Virginia from 2014 to 2018, who's been leading the battle for Virginia Democrats in 2019, and who himself considered running for president in 2020. So much to talk about. What's going to happen in Virginia on November 5? Who's Terry McAuliffe supporting for president in 2020? And might Terry McAuliffe return as governor of Virginia in 2021? Let's find out. Governor, it's good to see you.
Great to be back with you, Bill. You and I go back a long way.
We do indeed. Lots of stories,
yes,
right?
We won't put those on the radio.
So what's happening politically in Virginia these days? Pretty exciting.
Tomorrow is a huge day for Virginia. We are going to win the House of Delegates, and we're going to win the state Senate. For the first time in 26 years, Democrats will control the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansion.
House is now, has been just one seat short, right?
One in both. We have an opening that's a Democratic seat, yeah. So we need one. You know, if I'm spitballing today, I'm 53 to 55 in the House, and I'm 21 to 23 in the Senate. We're going to get both chambers. But think about that. So, you know, as governor, I put 26 gun bills up. Every single one of them was killed at 6:30 in the morning by a Republican subcommittee without even a recorded vote. So we'll get the gun bills passed. We'll get ERA passed. We'll raise the minimum wage. You know, as governor, I put Virginia and Reggie, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, through executive order. Mm-hmm. Republicans took it out. Those days are over in Virginia. It is going to be so exciting. So people listening, if you haven't voted, you make sure you get out there tomorrow.
So there's a lot riding on this election.
Yeah.
Virginia.
Yeah.
For the nation as well? Do you think it bodes well for what's happening around the rest of the country?
Oh, sure, Bill. The idea that we're going to shift two chambers for the first time in 26 years. I remind you, in 2016, the morning after the election, people woke up and said, holy cow, how did this happen? And 92 million people didn't vote. And we lost three states by 77,000 votes. And I think people, there was angst, anguish, oh, I thought Hillary was going to win, or whatever it may have been. They decided, many of them, they'll never miss a vote again. So in 17, we picked up 15 new House of Delegate members. We were the first test after the Trump election. And it was the biggest pickup in 140 years. Then 18, we win the House, biggest pickup since 74. We won 8.6% of the popular vote, the biggest in 100 years. We won seven governors, eight state House chambers. Now, 19, Virginia will do the same thing as a precursor to 2020. This is the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency.
And for, in Virginia, yeah, that's very significant. Yeah. And for Virginia, you mentioned some of the things. What does it mean? What are some of the issues, tell us again, that are riding on this election in Virginia?
Well, to put it in perspective,
you started with guns.
When I got elected 6 years ago tomorrow, Republicans controlled everything. All the statewide races. I only had 32 Democrats out of 100 in my House of Delegates. But you know what? We've been chewing back. We've been fighting. As you know, I was the most, by far, the most progressive governor in the history of the state. I restored more felon rights than any governor in American history, kept our women's clinics open, stopped all their anti-gay legislation. But I also vetoed 120 bills, a record. I never lost one. But horrible legislation. What we can now do, it's not block and tackling. It's now taking Virginia to the next level. It's about passing the ERA. We're the next step. We get one more state, we move forward. It's about raising our minimum wage, which is a disgrace, $7.25. common sense gun restrictions we'll put in place overnight. It's about good environmental policies and all the things that, you know, I tried to do as governor. But the amazing thing, Bill, this year, it was an interesting story in the New York Times last week. Republicans are running on Democratic issues. They got Medicaid expansion done. It's unbelievable. I mean, these are the same folks who fought me for 4 years.
Right.
So Virginia turns the next chapter come tomorrow.
To what extent did Donald Trump help what's happening in Virginia?
Well, I would like to say it was my 4 years as governor.
Yes.
Well, but you're right. I mean, there's no question.
On top of everything you did, to what extent did Donald Trump contribute?
No, but we're a different state, and we're very proud of it. But Donald Trump has been the best motor we've ever had. In fact, Pence announced he's coming into Virginia Beach. I tweeted out, I mean, thank you, thank you, thank you. You have so mobilized our grassroots. So Roanoke College poll the other day had Trump at 27% favorable rating in Virginia. We have never in our history had a president at 27%. Mm. So people have had it. What's really happened, Bill, as you know, is suburban women, independent women, have dropped in droves for Trump. And we are now picking up what is going to watch Wednesday morning, Bill. So, you know, obviously Fairfax, Democratic County, you got Arlington, you've got Alexandria. Two of the fastest growing counties in America, Prince William and Loudoun, both have Republican Board of Supervisors. Wednesday morning, I guarantee you, Bill, they will both flip to be Democratic. Mm. We will win the county chair in Prince William, which had, remember, crazy Corey Stewart and all the crazy Trump stuff. We will Ann Wheeler will win that. Phyllis Randall, who is the chair in Loudoun, she'll get reelected, a brilliant young woman. And this state is going blue. I meant Trump to answer your question. I think Trump will have for that.
In Virginia, you mentioned Virginia Beach. In May this year, there were 12 people killed in a mass shooting at Virginia Beach. What additional gun measures do you see, gun safety measures, that Virginia will be able to do to prevent?
So as I say, I put up 26 background checks, closing the gun show. I don't know, Bill, have you ever been to a gun show? You know, they're underneath huge circus tents, thousands and thousands of guns laid out on the table. No background check. You can do whatever you want. You go in and buy whatever you want. Shutting that down, ought to have background checks for everybody at a gun show. But getting rid of these high-capacity magazines. And listen, Bill, I hunt. I take my boys hunting. All I'm asking for is common sense gun restrictions that will keep our community safe. We're not, I go bird hunting. When I went out and bought a shotgun, I went through a background check. It takes about 6 minutes. You hand your license over. They go check the FBI database. And that's what we need. And Governor Northam, after Virginia Beach, called a special session, rightfully so, to bring them back. Let's pass some of these things after the trauma that we went through at Virginia Beach. We had Virginia Tech, which, as you know, is the largest mass killing on a college campus. The Republicans adjourned, Bill, in 90 minutes with taking no action at all. So their inaction is going to be action for people to come out and vote tomorrow and get rid of them.
We've known each other a long time, so I don't mind asking a question you may not be comfortable with, but you mentioned Governor Northam. After he got in a little bit of trouble, you called on him to resign.
Yeah.
He didn't. He's still there.
Yep.
Did you jump too soon? Do you regret that?
Well, Friday night when I talked to him, and listen, he was my lieutenant governor, and I was his big advocate for governor. When I talked to him Friday night, you know, he'd released the video that said he was in the photo. And the photo was someone with blackface and someone with a Ku Klux Klan outfit on. And for me, I mean, as you know, I leaned in on criminal justice reform and restoration of rights. Had the governor been wearing a KKK outfit, that to me was unacceptable. You cannot be the governor of Virginia, the former, capital of the Confederacy. And then the next day, he came out and said he wasn't in the photo. And if he had told me Friday night that he wasn't in the photo, it wouldn't have been an issue. So I can't explain it. He's a good man. He's been a great governor. I can't explain the Friday to Saturday. And people called for him to resign Saturday after he said he wasn't in the photo. I never would have done that. And when I talked to him, it was clear he was in the photo. So I can't explain it. But, you know, we've now moved on from it. But at the time, you can't be perceived as possibly putting a Ku Klux Klan outfit on. You just can't.
a lot happened on your watch. A lot of good things happened on your watch, which you told us about.
Yeah.
One thing.
Oh, I hardly started to tell you the good things. Come on.
We do have a limit on time,
okay, fair enough.
Even on a podcast. one thing that happened on your watch, which shocked the nation, shocked the world, was Charlottesville. And you've written about it in a best-selling book, Beyond Charlottesville, just out about a month ago, taking a stand against white nationalism. August 12, 2017, you talked to Donald Trump that day.
I did.
And what impression did you have from talking to Donald Trump? That he was going to go out there and basically praise the white supremacists?
So it started, Friday night is when it actually started, unbeknownst to anybody.
Before,
so hundreds
right.
of these neo-Nazis and white supremacist haters came into our state from 35 states. And if you were out on the lawn of UVA, you call it lawn at UVA, you don't say campus, the lawn of UVA, which built by Thomas Jefferson, there's a mountain there. And about 9 o'clock at night, Bill, what you could see is a long line of hundreds of torches. So all you could see was like a long white snake screaming, "Jews, you will not replace us, blood and soil," the chants from 1934 Nazi Germany. That was Friday. And then Saturday, I never in my life have seen anything like this. 1,000 people, every other word was the F and N word. Every woman was called the F and C word. They went in front of the synagogue where, you know, they had taken the Torah out smartly and marched in front of it and said, "We're going to burn you and burn that synagogue like we did in Auschwitz." I got to tell you, I've just never in my life, how did we get to a place in America? People used to wear hoods and do it at night. Here they were in the middle of the day. So I talk about in the book, I declared a state of emergency. We cleared the park. And about that time, the White House called. And it was interesting. It was Operator One. And as you know, I had spoken to Operator One hundreds of times in the past. It had been a long time since Operator One called me. And she said, "The president would like to talk to you. We'll call you back in 5 minutes." And they called back. And I talked to the president, explained to him what was happening in Charlottesville, how horrible these people were. And in fairness, I've known Trump for a very, very long time.
You played golf with him?
Golfed him. He gave me $25,000 when I ran for governor. This guy was a Democrat his whole life, you know. I mean, when I was chairman of the Democratic National Committee, I mean, he was a Democrat his whole life. This whole thing is a charade we have today. But at some point, I went through what had happened, and I did make the point to the president. And I said, "Sir, you..." And I dealt with them a lot because I was chairman of the governors, the national governors. Mm-hmm. So I dealt with them on immigration. I dealt with them on health care. I said, "Mr. President, you've got to stop this hate speech." I said, "You really are dividing this country." I don't blame Trump for specific acts, but I do blame him for the environment and the tone that these people think it's okay to do this. And we actually had a good conversation. And at the end of it, he said, "Terry, you're right. I want to work with you." I felt great. I said, "Well, Mr. President, you go do your press conference. I'll wait for you, obviously." So I hung up the phone. I felt I'd moved him into a good place. Now, I was a little hesitant because I'd moved him into a good place, I thought, on immigration, on health care, and he always went the other way 24 hours later after his staff got to him. So I waiting for his press conference, half an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours, something had gone on. And Bill, obviously what had gone on, Bannon or Miller, whoever, had got to the president and said, "No, sir, you will not condemn these folks. You will not even use the name white supremacist, and you will not say neo-Nazi," which he didn't do. And he actually came out, Bill, and said there were good people on both sides. Mm-hmm. I was there. The Adolf Hitler ideology, the swastikas, the shields, there were not good people on both sides. And as I explained to the president, this was a real opportunity for you. I said, Bill Clinton had Oklahoma City, Barack Obama had Charleston and Sandy Hook.
George Bush, 9/11.
Bush had 9/11. There is a time that the world is looking to you, not only in America, to be the moral leader, to stand up in a time of crisis. He failed that day. He failed miserably. So I had to go out and give my speech. I had to do what the president should have done. And I condemned him. I called him out. I told him, "Get the heck out of Virginia. Leave this country. You're a bunch of damn cowards."
You talked to Trump since?
No. No. As I say, I dealt with them on a lot of issues, but that was really it. And I would, Bill, but – and here's the problem I have with Donald Trump. I don't think he has any moral core. You know, if I tell you something as governor, I'm going to fight like a dog to do it because I believe in it. And I may not win. There's none of that with this guy. He will move on a dime if he thinks it's expedient to him politically and it will help him. He doesn't care about any of this.
Is he a racist?
Yes. And I don't say that lightly. I don't throw that out lightly. But, Bill, when he ran for president, he was retweeting white nationalist tweets. He said that I, Donald J. Trump, are going to ban all Muslims from coming to America. He has called Mexicans rapists and murderers. You don't use that kind of language. And I talk about in the book, the first, John Lewis writes the foreword for me. The first third is about Virginia's history. We've had a very bad history as it relates to slavery, of course, and racism issues. The middle of the book is really about what happened at Charlottesville. You know, as I say, I'd worked with our state police. We'd embedded secretly. But we knew what was going on. And then the last part is, how do we go forward? How do we move on from here? And I'd say in the book, I think when Barack Obama got elected, Bill, for a lot of people, they had a hard time stomaching the idea that we had an African-American president. But they didn't really act on it. Trump comes along, and they then feel they have license now to come out and do it in public.
Before we get to how we move forward, reading some of the reviews of the book, there are some people who have said that you, the state police, should have anticipated the violence, and if you had acted sooner, might have prevented it.
Well, we did act. I mean, I called the guard out for the first time in 40 years. I had 900-plus state police down there. The issue is, I talk about in the book, and I warned the city. In fact, I have the memo in the book warning the city. And this isn't about second-guessing what the city did. But remember, we work for the city. The city's in control. My troops and state police were there in support only. The city runs it. And listen, I don't want to be overly negative, but the permit should never have been applied for and accepted. It should never have been approved for Emancipation Park. It's too small. The key to controlling a protest is to keep the two sides separated. And no way could you do that. Finally, the city on Wednesday night applied to move it. The ACLU sided with the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists. And a judge at 9 o'clock on Friday night said, no, we're going to keep it there. I love the First Amendment. But, Bill, if we are saying we cannot keep you safe in this circumstance, that should step on top of every other issue. And unfortunately, people died. Heather Heyer was out as a counter-protester, and this wacko James Fields revved his car up to 60 miles an hour and ran through a crowd. I lost two state troopers in a state police helicopter that day. It was traumatic. And many people were injured. And so, you know, should streets have been blocked off and things like that, you can always second-guess that. We've made recommendations, but this book is not about, the book is about, from my perspective, how we prepared, how we dealt with it, but more importantly, the book is about racism in America. It exists. As bad as Charlottesville was, Bill, it ripped off the scab in racism. It exists in this country. White people do not like to talk about it. They need to talk about it. I don't want to hear about reconciliation commissions, a bunch of white people sitting around feeling good. We got to do something. The last part of the book is do something. I leaned in. I forbid the Confederate flag from being on the Virginia license plate. I banned the box for state employees. I restored more felon rights than any governor in America. I did more pardons than any governor. You know, I've leaned in on these issues. Too many politicians talk, and they don't do anything.
So have we learned any lessons from Charlottesville, do you believe, or are people just going to, as we so often do, right, talk about it and then move on and do nothing?
Yeah. Well, we in Virginia have done a lot. I don't want to get in the weeds. There is a chapter that is a little mind-numbing, but I think it's important, about permitting. That permit would never be, we changed things, so that permit could never be granted again. But the good news, thanks to the counter-protesters on social media, they put all these clowns' pictures up on social media. Many of them lost their jobs. We've convicted a lot of people. There's more trials going on.
Were they Virginians, or where did they come from?
They were not. They were from 35 states. So what happened is Kessler and David Duke and, all of these nuts got out there. And as I'm saying, Trump created this environment. Now, it started with monuments in Virginia. So Charlottesville said they were going to take down the Robert E. Lee statue. Bill, these people didn't even know who the heck Robert E. Lee was. This was an opportunity. This was going to be their Woodstock of hatred. This was going to be the convening point of all these things Trump had put out there, that they could come out and spew their hatred. David Duke said, we're here because of Donald Trump, because of what he says. He's given us license to do it. He's quoted in my book. So, no, they were not from Virginia. And that's one reason I wrote the book. At one point, I was running for president, as you know, or thinking hard about it. I went to 25, 26 states. Everyone said, why did these Virginians do this? I said, they weren't Virginians. They were from all over the country. And Kessler and all of these, you know, they've paid a horrible price. And the movement really got crushed, as you know. They tried to do it a year later. Like six people showed up.
Right. And we're talking with Governor Terry McAuliffe. We'll take a quick break here on the Bill Press Pod. Today's podcast with Governor Terry McAuliffe, brought to you today by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, those good men and women of the UFCW under President Mark Perrone. They're the ones who give us great service at the big, giant retail grocery stores all across the country. We salute them, thank them for their good work, and thank them for their support of the Bill Press Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back with Governor Terry McAuliffe, former governor of Virginia. Governor, just before the break, you mentioned 2020. Since you're not running, who is your candidate for 2020?
Well, I am a CNN commentator now, as you know, so I am sort of neutral and I get to pontificate.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly. You get to pontificate on the field. And, you know, I'm a former chairman of the National Committee, and we've got a lot of great candidates running. You know, I think today probably, Bill, it's Warren and Biden right there at the two top, and then obviously Bernie and Pete right underneath that. I think those are the four right now. It's going to come fast. You know, we're 90-plus days from Iowa. And then, as you know, you've got Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, and then March 3rd, Super Tuesday. What, almost 40% of the delegates? That's $100 million a day.
California.
You bet.
Included,
big one.
For the first time.
And Virginia.
Right. Are there some who are worried about the front runner, Joe Biden?
Yep.
The other day, you said that you're one of those worried about his fundraising at any rate.
He's worried about his cash on hand.
Cash on hand.
Yeah, and I've seen this movie before.
Right.
You know, as I just said, you're about to get close to Iowa.
You said it looks like he's running for city council, not for president.
I said what he ought to do, and I hope he was listening to me closely. And I'll be with him on Sunday. He's doing Get Out the Vote in Virginia for our elections. He ought to get off the private planes. I didn't like to see that. And he ought to get on commercial. He ought to go up and down the aisle, hand out pretzels and peanuts. I mean, people love Joe Biden. Average Joe. He's got to get back to that. And that's who he is. He's, you know, hey, Joe. And I remember when he came down campaigned for me for governor, sitting in the back of the limo and everyone's yelling Joe. He says, it's so funny. No one ever calls me vice president. Hey, Joe. I mean, that's who he is.
Right.
And he's got to get back to that. But anyone should be concerned with that cash on hand. I mean, you've got Senator Warren with, what, 35 or 33? Senator Sanders with 33 or what million? As you know, Bill, you and I have been doing this a long time. It's not like your ideas aren't good anymore. You just plain run out of money. And if you don't have money, and what's in the back of my mind is March 3rd is at least $50, if not $100 million a day that you got to buy TV in all these different states. And if you don't have that cash on hand saved up, so, you know, listen, I'm an honest arbiter. When I see him, I call balls and strikes, and I've been friends of Joe for a very, very long time. And, you know, if I see low cash on hand, I was trying to send a signal. You know, you got to fix this.
Is Elizabeth Warren too far left?
You know, I get asked that a lot. I love her policy, that she's got plans for all of it. I'm concerned on some of the issues, the Medicare for All. If you tell Democrats that you're going to lose your private insurance, only 20% of Democrats support it, which means you got to, if you're the nominee, you got to convince 80% of your own party than the others. So I'd like, and I've been a little distressed with these debates. You know, all of this Medicare, we own the issue of health care. I mean, President Obama got 25 million more people covered, and we own the issue. But these debates, it's mind-numbing trying to figure out Medicare for All and how you're going to pay for the $3 trillion. I think we're losing the American public because we're making this so confusing. You know, you're listening to this podcast right now. I guarantee you, Medicare for All is not at the top of their list. What is at the top of their list? How the heck am I going to pay for my prescription drugs next week? I just think the Democrats got to get down and talk about the issues that matter to people every single day. But all of these, which are great goals and objectives, I love it. I think they're terrific. But people are hurting in this country today. Tell me what you're going to do about job creation and credentialing and apprenticeships and prescription drug costs. That's what they want to know, and we got to do a better job of that. We spend so much time talking about immigration policy and whether they're going to get free health care. You're sitting in America saying, hey, wait a minute. I'm paying for health care. Mm-hmm. And you're going to give it away for free? Or I don't have health care? So I just want to see these candidates focus more on the things that people in America
care about. Well, I wanted to ask you about that message because, again, we've been through so many campaigns. You know, there is a tendency to just talk about how bad Donald Trump is. Yeah. Not good enough, right? Yeah.
No, my goodness, no. Everybody knows that. Forget it. You don't have to spend one. But it's a great applause line in debates. But I agree with you. Everybody's got that. I mean, he has had one poll, Bill. The day after his inauguration, Fox poll, 47-46, favorable. The next day, it was reversed. That is the only poll since Donald Trump has been president where he has had a favorable job approval rating. One, that's it. So they all know that about Trump. People want, they're tired of politicians talking and not acting. And they want to hear specific plans.
So why didn't you run?
Well, I spent all of 18 traveling. I thought, you know, as a Southern Democrat, I inherited a huge deficit from the Republicans when I became governor. I left the largest surplus, record job creation, was the most traveled governor in America, huge progressive record on all these issues. I thought it was a great message.
You had a story to sell, no doubt about it.
But there were 25 candidates running. Biden, I always viewed sort of in that space, so, you know. And right about this time, we did have, as you mentioned earlier, some issues in Virginia. So I had Senator Warner and many of the leadership of the Democratic Party, the state chair, Susan Swecker, all came to so I met with Biden Friday night, spent 3 hours. He said, I'm running. Went through his polling data, which was pretty strong. And then the weekend, the state party and others came to see me and said, we need you in Virginia. You're the only one that can pull all this together. So, you know, I made a decision. You got to make an impact in life, Bill. Do I get in with 25 with this, or do I go back in Virginia? And I've done 122 events since May in Virginia, every candidate running for the House and Senate. And we're going to win tomorrow. And for me, that's great satisfaction. I would love to have run for president. I thought it was a great message. I'm a young man. Who knows?
And
don't laugh at the young man
thing. No, I'm just saying. No, there are other opportunities. And some people think somebody else may still jump into 2020.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. It's late to do that.
Yeah.
First of all,
not something you're considering.
No, in this space, no one's going to. I mean, I read the other day, heard Bloomberg was thinking about it. You know, come on. As you know, you have to start filing for these states. New Hampshire's opened up.
Hillary not thinking about it?
No. Just talked to her the other day.
Something else is going on in Washington called an impeachment inquiry.
Yep.
What's your take on that? Do you believe that Democrats are doing the right thing? Do you think Donald Trump has committed an impeachable offense, and will he be impeached?
I think he will be impeached. I think the House is doing the right thing. We've seen enough. He obviously, as we all know, was talking to a foreign head of state to involve himself in domestic politics here and withholding financial aid at the time we're fighting Russia. I mean, the whole thing. And what was really troublesome for me this week was the lieutenant colonel's testimony, where you had these eclipses, these blanks in the transcript.
Dot, dot, dot.
Which he filled in. And it was the name of the company that Biden, Hunter Biden had served on. So what was very troublesome to me is the cover-up. Not only the act, but the cover-up. They deliberately took that out. And that's malfeasance. And he's going to be impeached in the House. The Senate, I think Speaker Pelosi's done it exactly right. Let's do it. Keep it focused on these issues. Let's do it quickly. I think the Senate will probably take it up January, February. I don't think there's any chance that they'll impeach him. But, you know, he's committed impeachable acts. There's no question. I mean, I lived through the President Clinton's impeachment. I mean, I lived through it. And you think, and you got to remember, Clinton left office with the highest approval rating of any two-term president in American history. Why? Because he got out of bed and fought for people every single day. You don't see this with Trump. World leaders rallied around President Clinton, if you remember. I mean, Nelson Mandela was the first one to call him. They're not rallying around Donald Trump. Everybody's angry at the man.
So there's some people, some Democrats are concerned that the impeachment process could get in the way in two ways. One, just further divide the country. But two, just get in the way of the 2020 election process, and people are going to be talking about this rather than talking about the issues. You know, if it gets into the primary season. So is your advice, get it done and get it out of the way fast?
Yeah, but these people who say, you know, the political, this is no longer a political equation. This is violation acts against our country on our Constitution. And it's clear that, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors, that he has done that. So you got to put the politics aside. You're right, and you've got to remember with Clinton, we actually picked up seats in 1998, broke every historical trend. But that's not, you know, that shouldn't have been impeachable back then. And now we're in all of these malfeasance while in office, using the office for personal gain. We just got to do it. But listen, I think the House will move very quickly. I think the Senate, they'll probably have it done by February, January, February. And then, be honest with you, 8 months later is an election. I mean, you know,
right?
Who remembers?
So you're known for many things, one of which is that you probably have the biggest, if people can still know what this word means anymore, the biggest Rolodex.
Yep.
Over 18,000 names you told Mark Leibovich.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was.
And that was a few years ago.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
now,
yeah.
God
we're
knows.
Probably over 30,000 now. Yeah.
What are you going to do with all those names?
Well,
what's next for Terry McAuliffe? And you had a good run at Governor of Virginia at one time. Why not do it again?
Well, so I'm focused all my energies on tomorrow. We'll think about what we do after that. I mean, Bill, I love being governor. I think it's the greatest job in the world. There is no other job where you literally can get out of bed and help people every single day. Now, I used a lot of executive authority. Mm-hmm. The Republicans sued me, took me to the Virginia Supreme Court on my restoration of rights. They sued me for contempt of court. But you know what, Bill? There's now 200,000 Virginians that have their voting rights back. Because in Virginia, if you steal $200, you're a felon, and you lose your voting rights for the rest of your life. Think of that. And it was put in our Constitution in 1902 by a Senator Glass, who said that day, I'm doing this to eliminate the darkie from being a political factor in Virginia. Well, you know what? New sheriff in town 114 years later, and I stood in that Capitol where he did it, and I removed it. So my point is, I love being governor. In deference to, we got a great congressional delegation, House and Senate, that's not my action. You know, I like to help people. And through governor, you can do that. Governor or president?
All right. That leaves a lot of options there.
And you got to have fun in life. Too many lemon suckers in politics.
And you do. And your first book, sure. What a Party.
That was a bestseller. Listen, I have two New York Times bestsellers. The nuns in St. Anne's Grammar School would be rolling in their grave. I got thrown out of third grade.
Nobody loves politics.
Talk too much. Teacher said I'm not teaching again with him here.
Nobody loves politics more. Nobody enjoys it more. Nobody laughs more at it and has more fun at it. or does more good at it.
Yep.
Thank you.
Fun. Thank you,
Jerry
Great
McAuliffe.
To be with you.
Great to be with you. And that's a wrap for today's podcast. Thanks again to Governor Jerry McAuliffe, and thanks to all of you for being with us. And please, if you haven't already done so, subscribe to the Bill Press Pod. It's easy, and it's free. Just go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or TuneIn. Search for the Bill Press Pod and click on subscribe. And by the way, best way to find out about every new podcast is by following me on Twitter at Bill Press Pod. So again, that's it. Thank you all for listening. And thanks to Governor Jerry McAuliffe. Stay strong. We'll see you on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.